Welcome to episode 133 of the Between the Cracks podcast. I am your host, Bill, and with me, as always, is my co-host, Chris. Chris, just we're just so excited about tonight's episode that we can't contain our laughter, and we just cannot contain our happiness, can we?
Although, after tonight's case, we have nothing to laugh about.
No, there is nothing to laugh about in tonight's case. But I am excited because, Chris, for the first time in BTC history, we are actually following through on something we said. We're doing a two-parter. And if you recall, the first part of this two-parter was done nearly a year ago. And that was episode number 117, Disturbing Lost Media, Volume 1. Tonight, we are finally following through on one of our promises, and we are going to be discussing Disturbing Lost Media, Volume 2. Now, like we did in the first part in Volume 1, we're going to be talking about roughly 3 to 4 pieces of lost media. So the episode's going to kind of be all over the place. We're not going to be focusing on just one piece of media. We're going to kind of dance around a little bit and discuss various things that have been lost and now have seemed to turn up. And the first two that we're going to be discussing are beyond disturbing, I'd say. So we decided to end it with something, yet again, that's a little bit more, I guess you'd call it a little bit more lighthearted. Well, definitely more lighthearted in comparison to the first two that we're going to be talking about. But Chris, with all that said, let me just refresh the listener's memory in regards to what lost media actually is. Lost media is defined as any media that is believed to have been forgotten or no longer exists in any format. The term primarily encompasses visual, audio, or audiovisual media, such as film, television, or radio broadcasts, music, and or video games. So basically everything, Chris. So the gist of it is that at some point in time, there was evidence of the show or movie having existed, and then perhaps there was some sort of controversy surrounding what was viewed, and thus that media itself went missing. So yes, we will be discussing lost media, but the difference here, Chris, is that this lost media that we're talking about has been found, hasn't it?
Oh, indeed, although I kind of wish it stayed lost.
you're not kidding, especially on the first two that we're going to be discussing. So, like I said, we're going to try to break it up into 3, maybe 4 pieces of lost media if we have the time. So, without any further ado, Chris, why don't we just hop right into it? Now, Chris, I'm going to ask you if you'll be so kind as to take us through the first piece of lost media, because the person involved in this looks very similar to you. So I thought you would be able to best describe this to our great listeners out in podcast land. Bud, I'm talking about nothing other than a 1980s Christian-themed television show entitled Joy Junction. Now, I've said many times I'm a child of the 80s, but I never really watched any kind of religious programming or Christian-themed TV shows, so this one slipped right past me, and luckily for me, it did, because this is the stuff of nightmares, isn't it?
Oh, very much so. And to kind of place the location of this, this takes place in Largo, Florida. And I'm assuming here, when you mentioned the Christian programming is probably a bit more prevalent in the South, so that makes sense, it being in Florida, that it would be a little bit more popular, especially with, you know, all sorts of ages, not just adults, but children. So
watch your step, Chris. I don't know if you can hear it, but Timber, our Bernice Mountain Dog here, is starting to bark up a storm, so you're on very thin ice as it is already, bud, so tread very carefully.
Well, I should say, if we're going to be treading any sort of direction here, that in the past, religion and children haven't really meshed well, and they will not hear either.
No. Now listen, man. Listen, I attended a Catholic school for roughly 9 years, and I made it out unscathed. Let's just leave it at that.
Case number 134.
Chris, please continue. What the hell was Joy Junction and why did it disappear? Please enlighten us.
So from the outside looking in, you might think this is, you know, quite the lovely, nice Christian show for children. It features a little puppet that Mr. William Ronald Brown uses to, I guess, converse with back and forth. And perhaps to children back then, that was something to admire or to grasp your attention. But I gotta tell you, I don't think ventriloquists are popular anymore, at least not for children.
Were they ever? And the doll, who I might say bears a striking resemblance to you, Chris, his name is Marty. And like you said, Ronald Brown, who is the puppeteer, the ventriloquist, he operates Marty. He has his hand up Marty's ass, and he speaks for him. But I must say, in the video clip that I had sent you, because this TV show has reemerged, because it was out there for a while, and we find that it disappeared for quite a few years in the early 2000s, or early 2010s, I should say, because of something that happened. But it has recently reemerged. But upon viewing a couple of these clips that are now out there, I gotta tell you, old Ronnie Brown here is a terrible ventriloquist. I might as well be up there doing it. You can see his mouth moving.
Well, he definitely didn't become famous for his ventriloquist talents, that's for sure. He does, however, become famous for another reason. Ronald William Brown, or William Ronald Brown, I don't know. I've heard it both ways. The point is, Mr. Brown here, while he spent his daytime as a professional puppeteer, this quaint southern-accented gentleman with thick eyeglasses, no red flags there.
I like how you pointed that out, Chris. Please, I mean, maybe this gentleman had problems with his vision. I mean, what's the implication that you're trying to make?
Well, he did, I will say, I'm watching that YouTube clip, he does come across as a nice young gentleman who seems eager to entertain children. By all accounts, I mean, he was often known for serving pizza to kids in the neighborhood. I think I even read that around Halloween, he would bring out this cotton candy machine, and he would make cotton candy for the local children. While we find out that he's very friendly with children and entertaining them and feeding them all sorts of goods during the day, apparently he had a darker nightlife. A alter ego? Is
that it? Ooh. You're not kidding, because it seems that old Ronnie Brown here like to spend a lot of time online. And like I said, this TV show, Joy Junction, took place in the 80s, so Ron was a lot younger when he was on TV, but he continued working as a puppeteer throughout the years. There was one incident that took place in 1998 that actually caught the eye of the local police, because it seems that Ron was pulled over for a traffic violation back in 1998. As the officer was explaining why he was pulled over, they noticed something on the passenger seat in Ron's vehicle. Care to venture what it was?
I didn't even want to guess.
Well, Chris, you are spot on. It was a pair of boys' underwear.
Perhaps he just wore small underwear.
Well, here's the thing. I mean, he wasn't wearing them. They were on a seat next to him. And the other troubling thing is that old Ronnie didn't have any children. So obviously this caught the eye of the police. They began questioning him. But we do find out, Chris, that the underwear investigation That led nowhere. He said they belonged to Marty the Puppet, and I guess the police believed them, and he was on his way. And that was in 1998. So from 1998 to 2012, old Ronnie seemed to stay under the radar. But Chris, something happened in 2012 that, once again, thrust old Ronnie Brown into the spotlight, didn't it? What happened?
Well, in 2012, at the Brown's Whispering Pines mobile home, he did live with his parents for a stretch of time until they passed away, just to give you a little background around that. The raid came up with some very disturbing findings. Over 200 child pornography images.
I can't say I'm surprised.
Over 100 photos of children tied up, gagged, and blindfolded.
Good grief.
Images of children who appeared to be dead. Apparently hundreds of images of some boy from his church who apparently died of a brain tumor.
Oh my God.
A missing child flyer.
Douchebag.
Boy's underwear.
Oh, not again.
A blow-up doll wearing children's clothing.
Okay.
And apparently, I guess he also resented some younger boys too, like probably just like acting out or whatever.
Or rejecting his advances, perhaps?
Right, maybe they, you know, they probably like this fucking creep and just, you know, ignored him or whatever. But that's not the most disturbing part. The most disturbing part is that they found some chat history in forums that he was online. And he was giving graphic detail on how he wanted to kill a young boy who went to his church, carve him up, and eat him.
Holy shit.
So, needless to say, this was all the evidence they needed to put old Ronnie Boy away for a long time.
Well, I mean, that's the thing, too, because I read that he was going to cannibal forums. Like, did you even know there was such a thing? Like, I mean, this is like a big subculture out there, Chris, where you can actually go into forums to discuss your desire to eat people. And in this case, Ron wanted to eat children. More specifically, ones that he had worked with in the past. Or maybe was at the current time.
Thankfully, they have, inside these forums, is, you know, probably FBI agents and stuff just chiming in and trying to narrow down the locations of some of these freaks. Who knows how long it would have been before he actually started acting out and, you know, getting aggressive. And because these things, they culminate into things like that, because it starts out as a thought and then it grows and grows and grows. And then these people eventually, they need to act on it. And if they get very violent, if they can't satisfy their needs.
Oh yeah, it was coming. It was definitely building up to that level. Absolutely. But, so it makes me wonder, Chris, I hate to keep harping on old Marty the Puppet here, but if he, Ron, the puppeteer, had these thoughts, what the hell was happening to poor little Marty at nighttime?
Imagine it was Marty the whole time that was doing all these things.
Or something tells me that maybe there was more than Ronnie's hand up in Marty the Puppet.
Oh, no. No.
But anyway, Chris.
Marty's mouth was glued shut. Fuck.
But, Chris, they were able to secure a conviction, and Ron Brown was actually sentenced to 20 years. Now, we should note that he did not actually act out on any of these fantasies, as far as we know. There seems to be no record of him killing or hurting a child in any way, and let's hope that he did not eat any of them. But nonetheless, he was sentenced to 20 years. But it brings me to another interesting point that I wanted to bring up. And I do hate to be the bearer of bad news here, but upon looking at Ronald Brown's mugshot, he seems to bear a quite striking resemblance to you, Chris. Can you please, if you don't mind, before we move on to our next piece of bizarre lost media, could you just describe to the good people on podcast land what exactly you see when you look at Ronald Brown's mugshot?
Well, I certainly don't see me. It couldn't be further from the truth. But I will say this mugshot, it looks like he was dragged out of bed and then they pasted a toupee with duct tape on his head and dunked it in a bucket of brown water. I think we have two other cases to cover here. We need to move on.
I need to move on from the pedo cannibal puppeteer, indeed, Chris. You are
spot on, Bill. This is Marty.
We are not going to keep doing this, Chris. Please. I mean, this was supposed to be a quick episode. I mean, we spent nearly, what the fuck am I looking at here, 40 minutes talking about this guy. So please, Chris, please. Enough about you and your ventriloquist ways. Let's get into our next piece of lost media that has since resurfaced. And I sent you this video right before we recorded, and you were quite taken back by this. I had known about this incident for a while, and it had slipped my mind. But upon us discussing that we were going to do this episode, I remembered it. And it was just as disturbing today as it was years ago when I saw it. Chris, for this piece of lost media, we're going to be discussing the infamous Twilight Zone, the movie, helicopter accident, which unfortunately ended up taking the lives of three people. One being actor Vic Morrow, and in addition to Vic, two child actors, Micah Din Lee and Renee Shin Yi Chen. And I believe at the time of the accident, these children were 7 years old and 6 years older, respectively. I guess we just need to hop right into it, man. This is just so disturbing. The footage, and I would advise anybody that may be listening to this not to view this, because it is very disturbing, and Chris and I both stated prior to recording that we do indeed wish we had not watched this, but it is available on YouTube, and for some reason it has reemerged through the years, and for some reason it's not breaking any community standards on YouTube, Chris, which is odd to me, but nonetheless, we have to go back to July 23rd of 1982. That is when, during the filming of The Twilight Zone, a Bell UH-1 Iroquois helicopter crashed during the making of the movie. And as it fell to the ground, it ended up killing all three actors, Vic Morrow and the two child actors, Micah and Renee. And in this footage itself, to describe it, Vic was playing a character who was trying to rescue these children from a war-torn area, I believe, in Vietnam. And the entire scene itself is so chaotic, man. He has both kids in his arms and he's trying to make his way through a body of water. There was obviously no CGI going on. This is all legit stuff that's happening, right? And if you look in the background, lights are flashing, things are exploding. It looks like there's mock gunshots taking place throughout the water. And then there's a helicopter flying above, which is creating all sorts of havoc on the water. And Vic is carrying the two children, like I said, and he's trying to make his way through this body of water, but it seems like he's having trouble due to the close proximity of the helicopter. It's creating this kind of wind tunnels, so he's having difficulties making his way through. So at this point, it looks like the helicopter is trying to lower itself down into the scene here, but unfortunately, the pilot ends up losing control. And at that point, the helicopter itself plummets to the ground, and the blade of the helicopter ends up decapitating Vic Morrow and one of the child actors. And unfortunately, it's shown in this video. And the other child actor ended up succumbing to his or her wounds after being hit by the blade themselves too. But I mean, my God, man, this footage is beyond disturbing, isn't it?
It's disturbing, and I think what's even more disturbing is that this was just so careless. This entire thing was so careless. And the children are actually not even supposed to be there. The actors, the children, were paid under the table because it was illegal to have children film at night, apparently, and or be in proximity of explosives. And
it's the fucking scene's going haywire, man.
And that's what ends up causing this to happen. Apparently, one of the pyrotechnics, they set off the explosions too early, and it caused the tail blade on the helicopter to get damaged, and then the pilot lost control. But if you dig deep into this story, I mean, it just gets more and more depressing because, first off, we find out that the parents of these children didn't know that there was going to be any explosives or a helicopter on the set when they were filming. The father of the boy, his name was Daniel Lee, he testified that he heard the director Landis tell the helicopter to keep flying lower. And this poor guy, he survived the Vietnam War in real life. He started having basically like PTSD when they were setting the explosions off. They basically told them that there would be no danger at all on the set, that it would only be noise. But clearly that wasn't the case. They were actually setting off explosives, which triggered this helicopter to go down.
Oh, fuck this guy. My God, man. I mean, I think now we're coming to a point in time, especially with all this P. Diddy shit going on, and it's being revealed, all this weird stuff that's going on in Hollywood. And, I mean, it's just such a self-absorbed, you know, what can you do for me, protect my own ass kind of industry, man. And you, it just dates back to the inception of movies, man. And you just see this right here, what they did to these poor kids. They didn't care about these kids. And it's obvious they weren't even cared about after they died, you know, because he ends up protecting his own ass.
Yeah, he hires a lawyer that basically gets him completely out. I mean, he even is acquitted on manslaughter charges.
Like, how? How is that possible? Just fucking paid off.
Probably. And you're right. And especially back then, and we're just finding out things now about all these producers and stuff and all this shit that went on behind the scenes. These people, like, finally, you know, speaking up or whatever. Back then, dude, you were just hushed. People would even see it happening and still just say nothing. It's a whole different world back then. These producers and stuff were basically like gods. They did nothing, you know, they were above the law, everything.
Yeah, you've seen it now too in that other documentary that's coming out, or that's out right now, Quiet on a Set, about all the shit that went on at Nickelodeon. Like, they go back and now they're showing clips of the TV show. Like various TV shows. I've never watched anything, but they got the one with the girl, Amanda Bynes or Burns or whatever the hell her name is.
Bynes, yeah.
Yeah, she ended up losing her mind, you know, from all the shit that happened to her. Like, but I was watching one clip from it, and there's all these kind of bizarre sexual innuendos that they're making these kids read in these lines. And in retrospect, it's so unnerving because we know what some of these people were charged with. I mean, this is something a little bit different here. We're not dealing with any kind of sexual accusations. We're dealing with complete negligence with regards to anyone's safety here. I mean, look what it did to Vic Morrow. He got beheaded here.
You had sent me this, I think a few weeks back when we first discussed doing this case, and I never watched the video. And so I just...
Thanks, Chris.
Well, I am staying true to form. I never watched the video until today, and I saw this, and it's just disturbing. It shakes you. You're just like, holy shit. Like, it's very disturbing. I mean, I know curiosity is going to get the better of most of you, and you're going to end up watching it.
Like we usually do, we followed the direction of some YouTube commenter who told us, left a comment saying to slow the footage down to examine it more. And, Jesus, I really wish we didn't do that. It's an image that you're never going to get out of your head if you watch it. So, be warned.
Yeah.
Oh, shit. But I'm looking this up right now, Chris. Vic Morrow, he is the father of the actress Jennifer Jason Leigh. And she was in Fast Times at Ridgemont High and all that. I remember her. It might be before your time, but I remember her.
I know that movie. I'm just trying to see which actress she is. Oh my God, yes, I know who that is.
Yeah, that's his daughter. Holy shit, I didn't know that.
Jesus.
Perhaps we should have looked into this before we started recording.
Well, nothing different there. But can we move on to the next one now?
Well, let me just end with this here, Chris. Landis and four other defendants, including the helicopter pilot, Dorsey Wingo, were ultimately acquitted of involuntary manslaughter after a nearly nine-month trial. The parents of Lee and Chen sued and settled out of court for an undisclosed amount. So once again, Chris, we see that there's people out in Hollyweird. They throw some money your way and get themselves out of trouble. And that's exactly what they did here. So, sick. I mean, just complete and utter negligence, and ended up causing the lives of three people that day. But like I said, that footage had disappeared for quite some time, and then it started to reemerge, a few years ago, and then now you can pretty much find it anywhere. But like I said in the beginning, Chris, I mean, but, you know, this episode is getting darker by the moment. I mean, between the cannibal puppeteer and now we have beheadings on the set. I think in order to wrap this up in true BTC fashion, we need to end this episode on somewhat of a lighter note, don't we?
I don't know how light it is, but yes, it is definitely lighter.
Well, yes, it is, because Chris, this last piece of lost media actually was lost for nearly 40 years until it recently made a comeback, and it involves your favorite TV show, Sesame Street.
I believe you mean Sesame Street.
See, I knew it was your favorite show.
Salami Street.
Chris, I'm going to ask you a question right now. Can you tell me how to get to Sesame Street?
I've never been, so no, unfortunately, I cannot point you in the right direction.
Chris, why the hell are we talking about Sesame Street? And we're back to talking about puppets of all things. Jesus Christ.
As we've already heard in the first case that we covered, some things that are intended for children's eyes aren't, sometimes they're a bit controversial. That was the case here on February 10th of 1976, when PBS released an episode of Sesame Street that involved the Wicked Witch of the West. That's right. That was oddly, in a very authentic witch.
I don't know where she came from.
A little creepy, actually. From The Wizard of Oz, everybody knows The Wizard of Oz, I should hope. And so, basically, this witch shows up on the set and begins, giving some of the cast members a bit of a hard time. And, well, apparently the viewers were a bit disturbed by it all, because it shows the Wicked Witch apparently threatening Big Bird.
Well, I'm looking at this, Chris, and I'm reading it. The witch was portrayed by Margaret Brainerd Hamilton, who, believe it or not, actually played the Wicked Witch of the West in the original Wizard of Oz. So this is the same woman nearly 40 years later. And I think that's why it's so disturbing, because she's aged quite a bit. And I should say that the makeup used in Sesame Street doesn't really compare to what was used on The Wizard of Oz. So it definitely looks a little bit more bootleg, if you will. And that kind of adds to the ominous vibe surrounding her look. So I thought that was very interesting that they actually had the same woman come and portray the same character all those years later.
I didn't even pick up on that, but now that I'm looking at her, I mean, I've seen the original, the 1939 release of The Wizard of Oz. If you hear her voice in this episode, you can recognize it if you've seen the original. Even though she's older, you could definitely recognize that voice.
Yeah, and I actually watched a few clips of it, and I didn't stick around for the whole episode.
hour?
I already know the ABCs and the 1-2-4s. But I watched a clip, and apparently what happens is, and I've always liked the set that they used for Sesame Street. It was very authentic to growing up.
That's because it's your hometown, Bill.
Yeah, I like the look of it. So anyway, it has some of the characters there. They're hanging out outside, like, a bodega or whatever. And this broom falls
whoa,
from
whoa,
the...
Whoa, 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 what are they hanging outside of?
A bodega?
You watch yourself there, bud.
I mean, that's what they're called, Chris. What the hell can I tell you? Anyway,
be very careful.
A broom falls from the sky, right? This little raggedy-looking broom. And the guy goes and picks it up. The Wicked Witch of the West comes down. She wants her broom back. Then she threatens this guy if he doesn't give it back to him. So I don't know what happens after that interaction. But somehow, some way, Big Bird gets his fat ass involved with it. And he's now holding on to the broom. So as Big Bird picks up the broom, the Wicked Witch reappears. And it's at that point, Big Bird wants to throw hands with her. He starts throwing shade the witch's way. And he's like, you know, if you keep fucking with my friend, there's gonna be problems, right? So he has the broom in his hands, and it looks like he's about to hit her. It's really weird. You know, Big Bird's usually calm, but I do like what he's doing here because he's sticking up for his friend. And at that point, the witch tries to grab the broom from Big Bird. He yanks it back, and then all of a sudden, they both get electrocuted. Big Bird and the witch, Chris. And then for some reason, I guess Big Bird wins this battle because it zapped her ass in the next week and she was gone.
I will say that Big Bird does tower over the Wicked Witch of the West.
Yeah, I mean, he's got to be able to open up a can of whoop ass on her.
I mean, if he uses that beak of his on there, he could cut her right in half.
So anyway, she then reemerges, and things go from bad to worse because she then is standing in front of a garbage can, and then our man there, little Oscar the Grouch, he emerges from the garbage can, and he's kind of into the witch. Like, he's into her negativity because he's always pissed off himself. Oscar the Grouch actually develops a crush on the Wicked Witch, who disguises herself as an elderly woman and returns to the store. At this point, she again attempts to retrieve her broom. But David, I guess that's the character's name, sees through the disguise and says that he will only set the broom down if she asks for it nicely. All right, well, they're trying to teach her manners. She does, and with extreme difficulty, as she picks up the broom, she transforms back into the witch. So this has kids reeling. You know, I mean, if you're like a little kid, you're 2, 3 years old, and you're used to watching Sesame Street, and everything's nice, and you're learning your little ABCs, and there's a cartoon going on and all that. I mean, this will definitely throw you for a loop, because, I mean, this is very non-Sesame Street-like. So let me get back to this story here. So she says that she is going to fly back to Oz and never see Sesame Street again. While on her way back to Oz, she says, look, no hands. And let's go over the broom, which falls back down to Sesame Street, down onto the street where David catches the broom again and begins crying. I can't go through this again. But instead of retrieving it, the Wicked Witch announces the sponsors of the show, which ends with her cackling off screen. So it has a very bizarre ending. So, and basically implying that our man David is going to have to get his ass whooped again.
Yeah, very bizarre episode of Sesame Street. And as you can imagine, well, there was quite a few amount of angry letters from parents.
Oh, they were stealing. They were stealing. Oh, yeah.
Apparently they were saying that their kids were screaming and crying, and they refused to watch any more episodes in fear that their kids had been scarred for life.
I mean, that's a bit dramatic. I mean, we call everybody in today's society snowflakes that have trouble with anything, but I mean, this is dating back to 1976. I mean, let's cool our jets a little bit. I mean, it's a little weird, but nothing that's going to scar your child. Jeez.
Yeah, you know, parents get over, you know, a lot of control. But regardless, this disappears off the face of the earth for 40 years because of it. And then only in 2019 did it actually reemerge as part of a 50th anniversary Sesame Street episode.
Fucking Sesame Street. Yes, indeed, Chris. But it seems that it was only there at the Lost and Found location that you mentioned in Queens until there was a little bit of an online leak on June 18th of 2022. That's on a website, Reddit. Some anonymous user released it. God, you got to love Reddit because all this weird shit pops up there.
Everything is on Reddit.
And the uploader did not clarify how the episode was obtained. Which led to people suspecting that it was obtained illegally or part of a data breach. Interesting.
The old Wicked Witch of the West herself must have released it.
Well, one of the viewers says that of the original broadcast recalled their experience upon seeing it, the leaked footage, and wrote, "I was so scared of the Wizard of Oz when I was a kid. Then to see this on Sesame Street. As a child, it was crazy." So, yeah, I mean, I get it. If you were afraid of the Wizard of Oz, I mean, then you see this little hag hop on up on Sesame Street. I could see how that could throw you for a little bit of a loop.
I mean, let's briefly go into the Wizard of Oz, by the way. That was a kind of fucking freaky-ass movie. Especially those flying monkey things.
Yeah, I never liked it. I mean, I know it's a classic and everybody goes crazy for it, but I don't think I've ever seen the full movie. I've watched bits and pieces of it, but I don't like it. My kids and my wife will watch it, and then they'll also watch Willy Wonka, which I've never seen. I don't know.
See the original?
No, I've never seen the original, but I saw the new one that came out. I took my kids to the movies to see it, and I was like, the first few minutes the kid came out singing, I'm like, oh God, this sucks. And dude, about 15 to 20 minutes into the movie, I started getting really into it. And when I walked out of that theater, I'm like, this is one of the best films I've ever seen.
It's funny you say that because we went to, we ordered it from the house when it was released on TV. And dude, we must have watched it 100 times already.
It's great. It's a great movie.
It is. And then it's like a musical, but.
Yeah. And I hear that it's not like the original at all. Like it's a different storyline or something, I guess, but.
Well, it's supposed to take place before he became a factory owner. It's kind of like him, like, starting out. But they definitely changed it up a bit, yeah.
Oh, yeah, it was cool. I like the little midget guy, too, that when he hops on the boat and gets him out of there before the thing blows up.
Oh, the Oompa Loompa?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Now, the Oompa Loompas were from Wizard of Oz, right?
No. No, you're... Are you thinking of... You're thinking of the...
The midgets in Wizard of Oz. There's definitely...
Yes, they are, but...
So the Oompa Loompas are just strictly part of Willy Wonka?
Yes, that's a Willy Wonka thing. You're thinking of the Munchkins.
Oh, okay.
That's what they are.
Whoa!
Hey, that's what they call them.
That's what they are? Are you calling people Munchkins?
I mean, it's funny because I've... All right, well, we won't even go into that. But if you go back, I am going to tell you right now. Open up YouTube right now. I'm sure you have it open, and just quickly look up Wizard of Oz monkeys, and tell me that doesn't give you nightmares for the rest of your life.
Let me look this up. Wizard of Oz monkeys. Okay, let's see here. Oh yeah. Okay. Yeah, I mean, that's the weird thing. You know, when you could tell it's actually a human being behind it, you know, it has these very bizarre wings, a very cheap velvet jumpsuit maybe that this guy's wearing, but you could see some of his facial features behind the mask itself. The mask looks very cheap. It does look like a monkey, but you could see the human eyes behind it. It's very, very bizarre. Yeah, I don't like this one bit.
Yeah, I will say there are some things, you know, you think that they can make things now that scare you. Now they can do it with, you know, computer generated, you know,
like CGI, stuff like
CGI, right. And it's not real because it's all been created by a computer. These are real. The costumes are real. And because of that, sometimes they're really extra freaky. And that's what I feel about this movie, even some of the scenes, these monkeys, man, I gotta tell you.
Yeah, I mean, like it's like any old horror film. I mean, even though The Wizard of Oz isn't a horror film, but it's like The Exorcist, the original Exorcist.
I beg to differ.
So much scarier than anyone that comes out now. You know, when Linda Blair comes running down those stairs backwards, and it's that old grainy footage, it's terrifying. I don't care what anybody says.
That movie, I probably watched, I want to say, I don't know, 15 years ago for the first time. I saw that pretty later on in life. That had such a lasting effect on me. I was like, holy shit, like, I like watching scary movies. That actually, like, got me thinking. Like, I was like, this is scary. Yeah,
It'll bother you.
It's freaky.
We need to do an episode on all the bizarre things that happened on that set. I mean, they call it the curse of the Exorcist. And I mean, this is some weird shit that happened to the people that were on that set.
Yeah. There's, like, some of these movies. Like, we covered The Poltergeist.
Yeah.
Because there was a lot of stuff.
I mean, this is a little bit more diabolical than some of that stuff, but you know, that has Poltergeist. I mean, that was one of our first episodes. That had some weird shit going on there too.
That fucking clown.
that scene will always bother me, man. Remember the arm gets all long and starts choking that little kid out.
And the face.
Yeah, the face changed, right? I mean,
yeah.
Yeah, it started smiling and shit. But what the hell were we talking? Sesame Street, Chris. I mean, we went off on a little tangent here. But yeah, I mean, in retrospect, now that I'm discussing all this and The Wizard of Oz and, you know, the little monkeys and all that stuff, I guess I can see how, I mean, this would definitely affect a little 2-, 3-, 4-year-old child. Yeah, I could see it. I could see where parents would be pissed.
Yeah. And so it disappeared and then reemerged.
Yes, it did. I don't mind this reemerging so much, but I certainly do wish that I never had to lay eyes on old Ronnie Brown and Marty the Puppet, or the unfortunate deaths of those three actors. I mean, my God, that's absolutely horrifying. And I think sometimes some media just needs to stay lost. But we find out that Joy Junction, the show that Roy Brown, the puppeteer, was on, I should have mentioned earlier, they actually believe that many of the episodes were actually destroyed after his conviction. They didn't want to be associated with that, and rightfully so. You can see why they would want the evidence destroyed. Nobody wants to be linked to a pedo.
Oh, absolutely not. And I can't imagine being a parent and rewatching an episode of his.
And your little kid right there? Yeah.
Yeah. Fuck.
Fuck, man. Yeah, that's brutal. But, Chris, that's it. Those are the three cases of bizarre lost media that has reemerged. And there's no shortage of this type of stuff, so maybe we'll do it with volume 3, 4, or 5 down the road. Who the hell knows?
Who knows, another decade.
Yes.
If this show's alive in a decade.
Yeah, we're doing something very wrong, because I'm running out of steam as far as BTC goes, so we'll see how much more life we have left in this.
Okay, so that's it.
That's a wrap. So, Chris, let me give the rundown, and we can get the hell out of here for the night. Oh, no, actually, Marty, will you do it?
Sure.
You want to get in touch with us? No, come on. If you want to get in touch with us, you can reach us at btcpod2020@gmail.com, or you can get in touch with us on Facebook, or what the hell's the other one? Instagram, at Between the Cracks Podcast. If you would like to become one of our lovely Patreons, please do so by clicking on the link in the show notes. And I notice that sometimes I forget to include the link in the show notes, but if you go through some of the old shows, the link is there.
I start running refer out to one of the shows that has the link.
I start running out of steam while getting these things together. But yes, if you can, it's more than appreciated. We really do love all of our Patreons and all the people that listen to the show, Chris. We definitely do appreciate it. So, without any further ado, what do you say we wish to fine people out in podcast land the fondest, a farewell.